Just a friendly reminder, the October Patreon prize giveaway is coming up at the end of the month. If you've yet to register, head over to WTSPWorldWar2.com, click on the Patreon link, sign up and subscribe. All you have to do is be a paid active subscriber. At the end of the month, we're going to pick the winner for this month's prize, which is a beautiful prize pack provided by our friends over at 1791 Everyday Carry, valued over $100, containing different items from 1791 Everyday Carry, including multi-tool carriers, flashlight carriers, the items you need to release the bulk from your pocket from the daily items you must carry to complete your job. For more information, head over to d-410.com/1791EDC. Once again, all you have to do to get your name entered into the prize pack giveaway is go to WTSPWorldWar2.com, click on the Patreon link, sign up and subscribe. You have to be an active subscriber by the end of the month. Your name will automatically be entered into the prize pack giveaway. What's up, OG5? Welcome to another episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. The consistently inconsistent podcast. So inconsistent, we haven't said the theme of our, or the name, the punchline of our podcast in years. But yes, we are the consistently inconsistent podcast. And we're playing catch up. We've been gone around the southern United States, hurricanes and floods and this and that. And holy crap. I've lived through, I don't know, how many hurricanes have hit this general area since Hurricane Charlie? Seven?
Oh, yeah.
Charlie, Irma, Wilma, Ian. I forgot all about fucking Irene. Irene, I saw a license plate that said Irene. You know, I still, on this computer tower, and we'll segue into this, I have on the top of my computer tower, Beasley Broadcasting Group event, Hurricane Wilma. I think it says something 15, 2005, all access pass. Hurricane Wilma affected Central Florida so bad, Mockalee, those areas, that K-Rock did a food drive, and then they put on a concert at the formerly Germain Arena, now Hertz Arena, had AC/DC playing, Bullet Boys was playing. Here's a fun fact. Bullet Boys. Here's a fun fact. Bullet Boys were huge in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
When I moved down here in 2005 and I started at computers, I was driving around a work van. I only had an AM/FM radio. And that's kind of how I got into Stan Haney. So in the morning, I would listen to whoever was on the political talk station in the AM. And then around noon, I'd listen to Rush Limbaugh. And then at 2 o'clock, I'd listen to Stan and Haney. And since I was working long hours, from 5 to 10, I was listening to the new show on K-Rock called The Liz Wild Show. And I started calling into there and kind of got a character name for myself. So before I was ever D-trained on 96K Walk, for a short period of time, I was known as Donnybrook. I would call in and joke around. And then so the night they were doing the Wilma thing, Liz Wild and them were broadcasting from behind the arena. So I drove down there with my camera to get photos, start talking to them. One thing led to another. They gave me a all-access pass, and then I went in and watched the show. But back to the Bullet Boys. I can't remember how or why, but for some reason, the lead singer of the Bullet Boys was there. And the idea was, I think at the end of the concert, when AC/DC was playing, they were going to do Highway to Hell, but they're going to have all the singers from that night's bands on, right? So all the people who were there, I can't remember who was all there. I probably could Google it and find out, but the lead singer of the Bullet Boys is trying to remember the second verse to Highway to Hell. Let's see, Hurricane Wilma Relief, K-Rock 2005. Concert Disaster Relief Hurricane, here we go. Newspapers.com. Let's see here. Oh, wow, this is so old. This is a photocopy of a newspaper clipping.
Oh, wow.
Let's see, blah, 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 blah. Community, Gulf Coast, yada, yada, yada. There's the title, but where the hell's the lineup? Let me see if I can find another one. I just want to get the lineup. Hurricane Wilma, October, blah, blah, blah. AC/DC, here we go. AC/DC, K-Rock, Katrina Relief Benefit Concert, Germain Arena. on DVD Rock Report. What the hell? $8.99. What the hell is this? Oh, is this a CD? Did they record that? DVD format. Yeah, it's a DVD. Here we go. Concert was to support victims of Hurricane Wilma through the Beasley Disaster Relief Fund and John Entwistle Foundation. The concert featured rock greats Brian Johnson and Cliff of AC/DC, Buck Durma of Blue Oyster Cult, Rick Nelson and Rob Zander of Cheap Trick, Joe Lynn Turner of Deep Purple, Eddie Money, of course, Mark Farner and of Grand Funk Railroad and Loverboy. And so the cat from Bullet Boys wasn't on the bill. Somehow he knew somebody. He ended up in town. And I remember he was standing out back and they asked him to come on to do the Highway to Hell. And he's like, I don't know the lyrics. This is 2005. I don't even think the iPhone existed yet. I had a Nextel. And so okay. No one had access. No one could just pull up Google, right? This is 2005. Not that long ago, but long enough ago that people didn't have smartphones. So I actually got out my Nextel, called Gordon, my brother, formerly of this show, in Vegas. He Googled the lyrics and then read them over the phone to the lead singer of the Bullet Boys. And so here I am. You know, I had called in. I had a over the phone, much like the Guardian or whoever, you know, Stan Haney listeners, you know, the people who'd call in. Yeah, so they sure. knew me through phone calls, and now they're meeting. So I'm meeting them for the first time now. Here I am backstage pack, standing back here, and I see Stan and Haney, and I didn't know them yet. I'd called them a few times. And but, yeah, so that was, like, weird. Sadly, Annie Whitmore, a.k.a. Liz Wilde, unbeknownst to me, quick fact. So I started calling in. After that night, befriended them. We started hanging out. Me, her boy, her fiance slash producer Mickey, and we started coming up with ideas. Well, at the time, do you remember the Cape Coral Elvis?
No, I don't.
There was this crazy that. Guy who had a duplex on Santa Barbara, about three blocks from Sunsplash, and he had a. His front yard was full of all these little Catholic knickknacks and icons, little, you know, the little candles like the Hispanic shoes or the Virgin Mary little crucifixes and the like little displays. But he would stand out on the sidewalk, dressed in his poor man's cheap Halloween polyester black jumpsuit. His hair was gray, but he had a dyed shoe polish black, wore this Elvis, and he would literally stand out on a sidewalk doing scissor kicks and all that shit. And so he kind of became a local icon in Cape Coral. He was called the Cape Coral Elvis. Well, Tom Green had his show on TV, and he ran his contest wanting people to submit videos of why he should come visit their town. And I got a copy of this VHS tape, full-blown, full-size VHS tape, not mini dat, not 8mm full-blown VHS tape. Two high school guys and a girl walked over to Elvis's house on video, and they sent this to Tom Green, and they said, hey, you know, can we see a tour of your house? They're assuming it's just full of Elvis paraphernalia, right? They walk in there, and it's wall-to-wall naked dude from not like hardcore porn, but like Playgirl centerfolds. And so it was like the creepiest thing, because this guy's 60-ish, 70, dresses up as Elvis. They walk in it's a mix between Playgirl centerfold ads and Catholic paraphernalia. And it's borderline, because it's on VHS tape back from 2003, 2001. It's almost very like 7-ish. Or Blair Witch Project-ish, they're walking around because they're just kind of creeped out. And they walk into his spare bedroom, and he has no shit, blaspheme, a 6-foot-tall, 4-foot-wide crucifix complete with Jesus statue laying on the floor, but up on the wall is just cocks and balls everywhere. It's just naked dudes and God, naked dudes and Jesus throughout this entire house. And so one night, me... Annie, a.k.a. Liz, Mickey, her producer, and their other producer, Jimmy, which they called Tallulah Tripod, we were at the bowling alley. We're at Cape Lanes, or Coral Lanes. It now has a new name. And him and his brother were there doing karaoke. And he was shit-faced drunk. I booked him. I went. I told Andy, I said, I got this fucking video. It's crazy. Let's get him on the air and ask him about the gay, you know, the naked dudes in his house mixed with the Catholic paraphernalia. So I booked him on the show. I was like, holy shit. I went from talking to being on the radio, talking to people on the phone, to hanging out with them behind Jermaine Arena at the show. And now all of a sudden I'm booking guests on a radio show. This is fucking cool. And prior to that, I had been in the studio once or twice. I had developed a relationship. I was actually in their studio when they interviewed, Rocco Desperio, the chef.
Oh, okay.
And so I was actually, that was kind of like my first famous person interview that I sat in on. And so anyhow, we booked him for the show. And that night, I was getting a head down there. I had to call him. That was the night Beasley's fired him, because that's how radio works. They don't fire you after your show. They fire you before your show, so you can't go on air and talk shit. And so, like, my first booking as a quote-unquote unpaid producer, we got fired. And then Mickey went on to produce for Cowhead. I think Cowhead, yeah, is out of Chicago. Was that who that was?
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he was big in the early 2000s. He was syndicated, Cowhead, I think. What the hell is his name? The Cowhead Show. No, that's the other cat. No, this guy was nationally syndicated. Not Cowhead. What the fuck was his name?
Man Cow.
Man Cow, yeah. Something or another. Some sort of cow.
Yeah,
so he was one of the four producers for Man Cow, and Josh Blue had won Last Comic Standing. He was the comedian that had MS, and he was going to go on. I'm not home yet, fellas. Okay, so he was going to go on Man Cow show, and I produced an opening bit bumper where I took a song and then took his comedy clips, and so that got played on a syndicated show, and I'm like feeling super fucking cool. And then, long story short, they got fired. And years later, I, you know, kind of did the same thing with Stan Haney. Started out calling them as a caller. And then what got me in the door with Stan and Haney was, when you've been locally famous as long as they had been, you get, you know, you're very wary who let you in your house. You know, you don't want some fucking fanboy to come over and work on your refrigerator, what have you. And I remember Haney was talking about having problems with his computer, and so was Stan. And I called him up, and then I emailed him and said, hey, I can fix your computer. Not only can I fix it, I don't have to come to your fucking house. I can do it remotely. So that was, like, huge for them, because, A, they can watch what I'm doing, and, B, they don't have to have some fucking fanboy come to their house. So long story short, I fixed both their computers. Then I went on to managing their Facebook page, and then I went on to running their website, and then worked my way up. So that's a brief history of me in my radio career. But the reason I bring that up, sadly, Annie Whitmore, a.k.a. Liz Wild, just passed away last week of bone cancer, of muscle cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
And I went and dug this up. I can't remember his name. Anyhow, he was I went and dug this up. Gonna play in a different player. Can you hear this?
Yeah! You know, dude, Poppy.
Who's coward like little dude?
Hey, Rock. Hello.
What's up?
What are you doing?
She was listening. She showed up like as soon as we got off the phone.
Oh, nice. Okay, so there's a happy ending to the story.
Yeah, but she told me I need to call you to get her credibility back.
Oh, well, I'm glad you and your man nipples called back.
My man nipples, huh? Yeah. Never seen my man nipples.
You cowered like a little puppy.
Who's coward like little puppy?
Wait, so where was your girlfriend for the last 3.5 hours?
Why don't you ask her?
I'm on the phone, too.
Okay. Where were you?
Yeah, here's my credibility. What? I left work, and I called the house all night looking for him.
Right?
And he didn't answer, and I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't he answer the phone? I'm like, okay, the only reason he wouldn't answer his cell phone is if he's at the radio station.
Okay.
So I start driving down to the radio station. I get, like, probably a block away, and I get a phone call from our friend that we work with.
Okay.
Okay.
And he's like, Don's at home. He just called me from the gas station from a payphone.
So what ended up happening is I actually became roommates with Annie and Mickey right around the time they got fired. And I actually was living with her up until the time I met Carrie. That was 16 years ago. And then I moved out of there and moved in with Carrie. Craziest thing ever. Now, Annie, before moving down here, she had a big show up in Boston. She was huge in Boston in the late 90s, early 2000s. Jim Brewer was her roommate for a while back when he was up and coming in Boston. Henry Winkler would call her from time to time. I remember one time me, her, and Mickey were sitting on the couch watching a movie. Phone rings. I was kind of annoyed because, you know, one of the things that annoyed me, and I always dealt with this growing up, like I'd go to summertime, I'd get out to my mom's house, we'd sit down and watch a movie, and the phone would call. Once again, way before cell phones, there was no texting. It was the landline would ring, and then they would sit there and talk, and you're like, I'm trying to watch a movie with you, and you're talking through the whole thing. And so you'd pause it. Say how the phone rings, Mickey pauses it, goes answer the phone. I'm like, motherfucker, who's on the phone? Mickey comes, Annie, Gene's on the phone. Okay, I'll take the call. You have to wait. Gene fucking who? Gene Simmons is on the phone. Okay, I guess we can wait for Gene Simmons to finish the fucking movie. And so that sort of thing happened all the time. But yeah, interesting note. How far back did you go into Stan and Haney history? How far back did you listen to Stan and Haney?
Oh, gosh. Probably 10 or 15 years.
Were you a fan when Leroy Van Zant was a producer?
No.
He was before Tommy.
That was before me.
Okay.
Okay.
Before Tommy, Lee used to be their producer. Lee was a producer when I started listening to Stan Haney, and I used to sit in my car like, I could do that job so much better. This guy's a fucking clown ass. He's clown shoes. Leroy Van Zant was a Firestone. His real name was Lee Firestone of the Firestone Ford estate. And he grew up with his Firestone money and, you know, had a great childhood and young adult era. And then, so he really, even when he got to that late 30s and 40s, he still didn't need a full-time job because he still had some of his Firestone family money. And so apparently he was a diehard Stan and Haney listener, and they had lost some back like copies of their show. And Lee was a fan, and he called him up, said, hey, I have copies. I record your show every night. And so he kind of became a producer that way. But they called him Leroy Van Zant because he looked like he played for Lynyrd Skynyrd. I mean, he had long hair, cowboy hat. Anyhow, when Liz and them got fired, Lee got fired too because he was kind of hanging out with them and, you know, how radio is, you know, no loyalty. And then that's when they brought Tommy on. Mickey and Annie ended up splitting ways. At a certain point, Lee and Annie started dating. They got married, and then they moved away. Sadly, Lee, 2 years ago, he was working for Waste Management as a truck maintenance technician because he was always a gearhead. He always had motorcycles and cars. I don't know the whole story. I just know what was in the papers. We never really talked about it. He was working on the back of a Waste Management truck. You know how they got that sliding door on the side up by the cab? He was doing work in there,
yeah.
Had to get to something, and his colleague in the cab misheard a direction and activated the fucking arm. And you know how that arm passes by that killed
yeah.
him. Crushed his head, killed him.
Oh, my gosh.
And so Annie had to deal with that 2 years ago. Unbeknownst to me, she had cancer too. So, she just passed away. I was talking to Jimmy the other day. He might come on. I wanted to kind of have a tribute show to her, but he said he's working on something with Dave Devereaux and even Jeff Zito. So they might do something maybe on K-Rock or somewhere. I don't know. But I just, with my history with Annie and all them, I just wanted to put that out there, you know, thoughts and to her family and all that. And it's just over the last few years, man, I get it. It's part of getting older. You know, I'm 46 now, but it's like, as we said before, the older you get, the younger old gets. It's weird. Like over the last 3 years, I've had like five of my contemporaries pass away. You expect it when you're in your 60s and 70s, right? But now you're 40s.
Yeah,
granted, she was 8, 10 years older than me, but she's still probably 56, 57. But yeah, it's just...
Which, Which isn't old.
No, but I'm just saying, you know, even with her being 10 years older, once again, she wasn't 70 or 80. It's just...
Right.
And to have a very rare cancer like that is just sad. But yeah, I just wanted to put that out there real quick because I already had it up. You know, one of the things we stand by here on the What's in Your Head podcast, and we've been that way since day one, which kind of gets us in trouble. It can oftentimes isolate people who might want to listen to the show, but we sometimes say things that not everybody agree with. We're real big on open dialogue and no censorship. But we try to be honest and we try to have details the best we can. Now, all over the news, all over the internet, the jokes of P. Diddy and the P. Diddy parties and P. Diddy's a pedophile. I just want to remind people that back on April 17th, back in fucking April, on this show, before it was on the news, before it was everywhere. I can't remember his name. Anyhow, he was a old Jewish guy from the music industry. Been around for a while. The guy brings up his name on TikTok. Apparently, he was a gay guy. And he went on talking in this video about, allegedly, according to these court documents, what Puffy would do is whenever up-and-coming rappers would come, they would basically get him fucked up, put him in a room, essentially sexually assault him, rape him, record it, and then sign him the shitty record deals. And when they say, well, I don't want to sign with you, they'd be like, well, okay, we'll just release it. Here's a video of you last night.
So I just want to point out, now you're every fucking podcast in the universe is on the Puff Daddy party, and every comedian, every TikTok. We were on it when I heard about it through a TikTok who, this guy, basically his whole shtick is he finds legal documents that have been recently filed for famous people. So he came across the early filings of these documents. And of course, no one wanted to talk about it, right? Because the power that Puff Daddy had. And we said, fuck it, we're going to. And I remember, and I said in that clip, actually, we did that in April. And I think I'd have to go back and play the opening of the show. I think I opened that conversation in April talking about how I wanted to talk about it 3 or 4 weeks prior, but didn't have enough information because I couldn't find anything on the internet to substantiate what this guy was saying. And so even in April, when we start talking about it, there's enough other smaller independent places were coming out with enough detail that I felt, okay, this is legit. So I'm just saying, you know, we may be a small little show. We may sometimes scare people off with our content, but we're ahead of the fucking crowd, which I've always been in my life. But anyhow, so I just wanted to point that out and just say, you know, sometimes we talk goofy shit, but sometimes we're ahead of everybody else. So just keep that in mind. And we want to thank the audience who's been here for the last 5 years. And please just to steal a marketing slogan from Stan and Haney in 2004, tell a friend, tell somebody, introduce them to the show and just pass us along to someone who, you know, likes to talk, not afraid of, you know, getting their feelings hurt and just being open and honest. But yeah. So we were gone due to Hurricane Helene and then Hurricane Milton. But so we're going to play a little catch up. How did you fare first and foremost through Helene? Did you have it? Because even though the storm didn't hit us, Helene was a very weird fucking storm because it caused more damage via water and flooding than it did any wind. Not only here, but in Tennessee, Georgia, and sadly, North Carolina.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
That little nothing storm. I mean, what was it? Was it like a Cat 2?
I think it was a 3?
Hurricane Helene. Death toll. Let's see. Was it a 3? Cat. No way. There wasn't no Cat 5. What the hell was it? It was a Cat 4. Okay. This episode is brought to you by our friends over at Fume. Fume cartridges are crafted from medical-grade polyester designed for use with essential oils. Fume, a non-vape, non-nicotine, non-tobacco device, works by replacing the hand-to-mouth fixation, calming nervous tension through fidgeting, and distracts you from the bad habits with delicious flavors. Psychologists have shown stopping a bad habit cold turkey is very hard for your brain. The Fume handheld device has a built-in fidget, also has a weight similar to most vape pens. If you're interested in replacing old bad habits with new good habits, head on over to tryfume.com/D410M and get yourself a free pack of toppers with your purchase. The toppers is a perfect new accessory designed with your comfort in mind. Slip it onto the mouthpiece for a softer, warmer feel. So replace those old habits with a new habit, a good habit. Simply go to tryfume.com/D410M. That's tryfume.com/D410M. Winds of 135, a storm surge, 13 to 18 feet. So Helene came, and we were really concerned because my dad lost his trailer in Ian due to 4 feet of water, and he just moved back into it 2 months ago. Mike actually went over and helped us plumb in the water and get the water plumbed up. Whole neighborhood was redone. As we spoke before, his trailer was built in 1974. He bought it like 3 months before Ian, after his wife passed away, and he sold his house in the Cape. His plan was to, hey, I'm going to pay off all my bills, buy this trailer in fucking cash, and live off my pension, retirement, and fucking, hey, I'm 5 miles from Sanibel, 5 miles from Fort Myers Beach. I'm in a fucking band. Things are going pretty fucking well for me. Moved in, bought the place, tried to get insurance. They gave him everything but flood insurance. They wouldn't give him flood insurance because it was hurricane season. Told him he had to wait until hurricane season was over, and then they'd give him flood insurance. Lo and behold, Ian came, 4 feet of water in his house. If you go watch the YouTube videos on... go to D410 Media and go to our YouTube and then look at the playlist Hurricane Ian. You can see me carrying like brand new mattresses still wrapped in plastic, but they got their stupid vent holes in them, so it's still filled up with salt water. All this brand new shit. And so we were concerned with the storm surge that his trailer would get fucked. And so he stayed here. We didn't take down my fence. It was getting a little rough and tumble. Everything was good. Not a problem. How did your neighborhood fair, because your neighborhood's older and it kind of sits kind of low in a bowl, doesn't it? Kind of a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. It is an older neighborhood, but for Helene, it wasn't too bad. I mean, we really didn't have anything, you know, really to speak of.
Now, what was interesting with Helene is prior to Helene, I had bought plane tickets because my mom was scheduled to have her triple bypass surgery on the 5th. And so Helene hit on the 26th, and I bought plane tickets to fly out. Let me pull up the calendar here. So it hit on the 26th. I was supposed to be on a plane on the 27th to fly into Kentucky, because my thing was I wanted to hang out with my mom for 3 or 4 days before her surgery and then be there 3 or 4 days after her surgery, because I haven't seen her like... I haven't seen her since I flew up for a funeral in Ohio like 2 years ago. So sadly, I don't get up north to see my family unless I'm going to a wedding or a funeral, it seems like lately. And so I want to get up to hang out with her. But we're concerned with this damn hurricane because I'm looking at the path and it's going, the cone was going right up Florida, right up Tennessee, right up Georgia, right up Kentucky. And that's my flight path. That's where I'm supposed to go. Flight didn't get canceled. Made the horrible mistake. For what it's worth, look, I don't fly a lot. I used to go when I lived in California. I don't fly a lot. A lot of my places are within driving distance. So I made the mistake of booking with Frontier. Good news is with Frontier, it's a direct flight. Bad news with Frontier, you're sitting on a lawn chair and everything costs money. I'm 6'5".
And it's not a milk crate.
Might as well be. I mean, the thing buckles. I put a video on TikTok. You can see, like, I have no space between my knee and the seat in front of me. It's, like, literally rubbing. I'm in the middle seat because I didn't want to pay $45 extra for a lawn chair in the aisle seat. Ooh, you can pick your own lawn chair. And so, you know, back in the day before flight became Greyhounds of the sky, back when we still had decorum, back when airlines cared about people. I mean, even when we were booking cheap flights, I remember... when I lived in California in 2001 to 2003 and I had to fly back here or fly to Ohio, I would get a Southwest flight, fly to like fucking Chicago, hang out in Chicago for 3 hours and then fly to Kentucky. It was like, you know, $249 round trip, 2005 money. So it was still considered a cheap flight opposed to a $500 direct flight. But even then, I remember you'd walk in, stewardess would see you. She's like, wow, you're a tall motherfucker. Clearly didn't say that, but that's what she was thinking. She'd say, you're pretty tall. Would you like a bulkhead seat for the extra leg room? It's open. Please. Thanks. Right this way. Sit me down. Or emergency aisle seat. Can you do the exit? In a case of emergency, are you capable to help provide, get people off the plane, this, that, and everything? Absolutely. For legroom, sure. Nowadays, starting back in 2020, you're a tall drink of water. Would you like the bulkhead seat? Sure. That'll be $65. No thanks. I'm good. So Frontier charges you for everything. So I booked my flight up there, and we're flying, and we hit some rough turbulence. And I posted a video. You guys can see it's on my YouTube page. And it's just a lot of head bobbing. So we get near Cincinnati. Now, Cincinnati's always a rough landing because it's at the top of Cincinnati. It's technically an Erlanger, and it's right outside the valley where the Ohio River is. And so it's always windy there on a fucking good day. On this video, you can see, well, first off, he says prepare for landing, and he fucking guns the engines because it's so windy. He actually had to increase speed. So we're preparing for landing, but we're getting faster. I go, that's bizarre. I've never experienced that before. And we're shaking. Now, a lot of people get nervous, and rightfully so. But the nice thing about being a World War II aficionado, I know that back in 1943, a fucking B-17 could fly with half its fucking wing gone, two engines out, and the fucking tail fin blown to pieces. So, you know, this modern day fucking Frontier piece of shit plane is gonna, you know, we're not gonna fall out of the sky. You know, it's not exactly flak, it might feel like it, but we're good to go. But I swear to God, when we hit the but I pulled the camera, I was like, well, if we're gonna wreck this bitch, I'm gonna get it on film. Content. And so we're coming down, and you can see in the video, everybody's heads are shaking. And when we hit the ground and make a landing, the whole plane bounced and then coasted to the right. When I landed in Kentucky on Friday, they were getting 50-mile-an-hour gust of winds. So it was. So if you think about it, I experienced Helene from the start, missed the worst part, thank God, and then I experienced the finish of it. And so I had scheduled a 10K trail run. I'm like, I'm gonna be in Kentucky. You know, I've been running for years, but I've only ran in Florida. Why not have something to do while I'm there? And so I stay at my sister's house, wake up the next morning, drink some coffee, hop in the rental car, and drive the 20 minutes to the suburban Cincinnati. I'm like, I'll just get a McGriddle or stop at Wendy's or something. I get there, get off the exit ramp, drive past McDonald's, Wendy's, Arby's. All dark. That TAR to town had power from these 50-mile-an-hour gust of winds from Helene. So I get to the park where the race is at, and I see the race conductor with some flags. He goes out and marks the trail. Long story short, the video's up on TikTok. Three trees blew over and fell on the trail, which apparently the race people knew about two of them and went and rerouted the trail. Didn't know about the third one, so I got lost because you come down this giant hill, and it just looks like a dead end. You just see bushes. Well, they weren't bushes. It was the foliage from the tree that fell. This wasn't like a small, you know, a small Florida tree. This is a fucking Cincinnati 80-year-old tree that fell over. And so the only people who knew where to go, the people who run locally. But long story short, that video is up. And so, yeah, I had to deal with the hurricane and all that. And then dealing with my mom. And then I wanted to stay. My brother flew in. Friday, I was supposed to leave Friday, so I got there Friday, and then my mom's surgery was on the 2nd, and then my brother came in that Friday, and I was scheduled to fly out that Friday, so I wasn't going to see my brother, but I changed my plane ticket, paid a couple extra bucks, and moved it, and I stayed. Well, then here comes Hurricane fucking Milton. And I'm like, oh, boy. I need to get down there and prep my house. Now, I said don't fly Frontier because you're flying in lawn chairs. But more importantly, they have no customer service unless you pay them the $80 a year for their frequent flyer, which I don't fly that much. And I'm already nickel and diming this trip. you cannot talk to their customer service until it's 24 hours prior to your flight or 24 hours after your flight. So you got technically a 48-hour window to raise issues with tech support. And so I couldn't call to try to get a flight early, which it didn't matter because they don't have flights out of Cincinnati on Wednesdays or Thursdays. It's Monday. I'm sorry, Tuesday or Wednesday. So I already pushed my flight to Thursday, but now the hurricane was coming. I ended up having to buy a whole nother set of tickets, flew Southwest, and then I flew home, got home quick enough to take down my fence. Carrie's brother came and put up my shutters for me, which allowed me to – I literally woke up at 4 in the morning, got to the Cincinnati airport at 5, flew to Midway in Chicago, stayed up there for 5.5 fucking hours at the airport, flew the 4 hours home, got off the flight. My dad picked me up at Fort Myers, came home, took my fence down in 1.5 hours, and then got up the next morning, went and helped her brother take his fence down, and then came home and sat through the hurricane. Luckily, it didn't cause a lot of stress here. Then I woke up the next day, put my fence back up, took my shutters back down, and just been playing catch up since then. How was your house with Milton?
My house was okay. My neighbor lost his fence from a tornado, and still there's a 35-foot cargo trailer in the yard behind me and one over that's laying on its side.
Did you see that picture of that fucking 20-yard? What's the construction dumpsters that they go by? Yards?
Yeah, so that was like a 40-yard.
A 40-yard waste management dumpster got picked up and sat on the roof of someone's house. And I'm sure it wasn't just gingerly. I'm sure their roof is fucked. But yeah, this tornado or hurricane picked this thing up and sat it on their roof as if we're playing real life Sims and your son comes in, look what they can do, and picks it up and drops it on top of the roof. Craziest shit ever.
Oh yeah. My neighborhood got torn up. Buddy of mine lives two blocks over and a block east of me, and his entire street got, you know, trees uprooted, and he lost part of his roof. He had an oak tree in his yard that, as close as I can figure, is probably 60 or 70 years old. It got split in half, and he lost part of his fence. And yeah, I mean, it's bad. There was a lot of damage from the tornadoes. The hurricane really didn't do anything, at least in our neighborhood. But man alive, it tore some shit up.
So we took our fence down, and some of my neighbors were doing the lazy, saw it on Facebook shit, where they were taking like three panels down, leaving a span of like 14 feet, and then taking two more panels down. And it worked for some people, but like my neighbor still lost like five panels. It took me 1.5 hours to take down two sides of mine. So to have three sides plus your gates, you can do it in probably 2 hours. So I don't know why they just didn't take the whole thing down. So now they got to replace three poles. But so my dad came here because, once again, the whole time, at least in Cape Coral. Now I know Tampa got a lot of wind, and there's a lot of places that got pretty beat up by Milton. So our hearts go out to you guys. But here in Cape Coral and Fort Myers, the big concern was the storm surge. Hurricane Charlie was a Cat 4. Hurricane Ian was a Cat 4. And I can't remember what Wilma was, but long story short, and Hurricane Ian sat on top of us for 9 hours. We've been through some Cat 4s. We're so jaded down here that when we see, oh, it's going to be a Cat 3, it's like, okay, on my fucking head, right? So insanely enough, they're like, this thing's going to hit Bradenton. We're going to be in the storm. We're going to be in the bands of getting Cat 3 hurricanes. Like, Cat 3, pshaw, bring it on. Actually, I was hoping to be a Cat 2, because originally it was supposed to turn from Cat 4 down to Cat 2. It's like, Cat 2, hell, that's a Wednesday here in Florida. So, but it was a Cat 3, and my dad stayed here, and we're trying to watch the storm surge charts, and I think Matt Devitt on Wink News said if you didn't get any flooding during Helene, you know, the storm surge is going to be pretty similar to Helene. And we get down there, and there's some water in his neighborhood, but even though his trailer doesn't sit up 7 feet high like all the new ones, it's still sits up on blocks, so it's 4 feet from the ground to his front door. So the water would have had to gotten to his neighborhood plus get over 4 feet. During Ian, he had water 4 feet into his house. So it was up 8 feet. After my dad finally took him 2 years to rebuild his fucking trailer. Because FEMA paid him flood insurance. So it took him a long time. And him and his neighbor survived and like four other trailers. But now the trailer park has rebuilt. They got a contract with a manufactured home company. They're selling brand new double-wide trailers stacked on fucking blocks 7 feet off the ground, and they put siding to just make them look like real nice. They're selling these fucking things for $180,000 plus lot rent.
Oh, man.
$180,000 plus lot rent. Problem is... Problem is they got like five or six of these old-ass eyesores. So they started going around the neighborhood trying to buy people out. My dad's neighbor bought out. They fucking came, tore his trailer part up. Now it's a vacant lot. So my dad has no trailers around him, just his trailer and his big vacant lot for half the neighborhood. All the new homes are down on the other neighborhood. They tried to buy him out. What they wanted to do is reimburse him for the repairs and give him like $75,000 off of a $180,000 trailer, but he'd still have to take a mortgage out for $110,000. And his whole goal was not to do that. That's why he bought this trailer in cash. He wanted to live off his pension, not ever have to have a mortgage again, yada, yada. So he said, no, I'm good. Mm-hmm. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm in a contract. You guys can't kick me out. I'm not shitting you, Morgan. Now, he had his trailer. Then they have a carport. And then he had a utility room at the end of the carport. And the carport has, it was added on, but the roof was all one piece. We go there. He had just moved in his trailer fucking 4 weeks ago. The hurricane winds, because there's no neighbors, came into his carport, hit his side of his trailer, just lifted and folded that fucking roof up and over onto his trailer. Now, his trailer didn't get opened, but it looks like it did. And he's concerned now. They're already trying to get rid of him, right? Because this eyesore of a trailer. Now, are they going to let him rebuild this fucking carport? So, long story short, before Ian, he moved in his trailer, lived there for 3 months, lost it. Rebuilt it for 2 years, moved into it for 3 weeks. Technically, he's lost now. Now he's back to living where he was before he fixed it. Basically, 2 years for nothing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I don't want to. He's like, what am I going to do? Spend $30,000 if they give me a building permit, put a new roof on this, just to have it get fucked up again next year? So he's looking to get an insurance claim, take their buyout, and get. He's like, clearly, the universe does not want me to live in this fucking place. I've had it for 3 years. I've been in underneath the ceiling of it for a total of like 3 months. But it's just like, are you fucking? And here's the worst part. The neighborhood wanted him out. I flew my drone. I got the footage. I haven't posted it. I am not lying to you, Morgan, with the exception of like some shingles off of the new houses. His trailer was the only one that took damage out of that entire fucking complex.
Man.
It's, you know, if you're a conspiracy nut, you'd be like, oh, they sent people to fuck his roof up there and stuff. I mean, it's like they want him gone. And just so happens, his is the only one that had any damage. It's fucking, it's getting old. It's getting real fucking old.
It really is. It's exhausting. I don't know what I was listening to, but they were talking about, you know, hurricane fatigue. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate thing. I left all of my stuff up till today. I actually spent my morning taking down hurricane panels.
And, oh, thank you, by the way, for the ones you gave me that I gave to my father-in-law. He conned them up, but yeah. It's the first hurricane. He didn't have to dick with fucking quarter-inch plywood. For those of you who don't live in a hurricane area, for those of you who don't live in a hurricane, because I had to do it in my dad's old house, in my old house, hurricane prep between hurricane shutters versus putting up plywood, is the difference between replacing a transmission laying in your driveway versus replacing transmission with it up on a lift. It's so much quicker and easier, and it's not, even if, you know, and usually what ends up happening is you go to the, if you're new to town, like we were, and you go to Lowe's, you can't find half inch plywood. Now you're stuck getting 3/4 inch plywood. Yeah. And that shit weighs a ton. And then you're trying to find Tapcons. But yeah, so thank you for that. But you just got your hurricane shutters down today?
Yeah, put the generator away, did all that. Because we lost power for a couple of days. I had the generator running. So I can't even remember what days that this spanned, but I think we were without power, but Thursday and Friday, it came back on. So I put the generator. Yeah. So it came back on Friday evening. So Saturday I put the generator away, took some of the panels down, you know, whatever. And then Saturday we had power. 1:10 Sunday morning, the power went out again. And I thought, no problem. I just, turned the battery powered fan back on and, went back to sleep. I figured, a couple hours it'll come back on. So 7:00, I woke up and I'm like, still no power. So I went and dug the generator back out so I can make some coffee. And, I keep it out in the backyard next to my travel trailer. So I just padlocked it to the tongue of the trailer and put a tarp over it and left it there, thinking this next one, would probably get us too.
Now, let me ask you this. I didn't think about it until just now. So you didn't have power in your entire house, but you had to run your generator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would it have been easier and require less? Well, I guess really the gas is the gas. I guess the use of gas isn't related to the output of the generator. I was going to say, would it have made more sense just to hook the generator up to your camper and hang out in there a few days because it's smaller, easier to cool, and more self-contained?
That would have made sense, except for I had my mother-in-law here.
Gotcha.
And my wife's best friend. And she has a Great Dane and a Yorkie.
Gotcha. See, now, so if this was a sitcom from the 50s, we'd have to make a mother-in-law joke about how you locked her out in the trailer. I miss mother-in-law jokes. That was a whole thing in the 40s and 50s. You go back and watch your Looney Tunes from the 40s. A lot of mother-in-law jokes in there.
Oh, boy.
So your house was the fallout shelter for friends and family.
Oh, absolutely. Because it was built in 67. It's a block house. And, I've got, panels, I've got generator, I've got flashlights. I mean, I'm overprepared for this because early on, when I first moved here, I moved here the August before Charlie hit.
Yeah, but me too. And I moved here Charlie, 6 months before Charlie. So we moved here about the same time.
So I got here August 3rd of
2004.
The year before Charlie.
2003.
Yeah, 2003. So I lived in the apartments at Metro in Winkler.
Okay, I lived over in the apartments next to the Omni Club, which is something weird now.
It's okay.
Red Cedar Lane.
Yeah, so at the time, I think it was Gulf Coast Hospital, whatever it was like right across the canal from me. So 6 hours we didn't have power for Charlie.
I was out for 10 days.
So I thought, this hurricane thing's a breeze. No problem.
Well, if you remember, Hurricane Charlie was in August because it was the sea, right?
Yeah, I think it was or was it September?
Category 4, August 9th.
No.
And the reason I remember was August 9th because I lived in a second floor apartment. We didn't have power for 10 days on our building. The unit across the parking lot did. Those fuckers were partying. Meanwhile, I'm sitting in my apartment, windows open, just dying. It's so fucking hot. Yeah, I remember, luckily it was apartment, so we had water. I had no power. So I remember just getting up like 2 a.m, just filling the bathtub full of fucking cold water and just sitting in it because it's so hot. And then I think finally after like a week and a half, I said, fuck this. I worked at CompUSA at the time. They had no power. I'm going to my mom's. I'm heading to Kentucky. I'm getting the fuck out of here. Made it up to Ocala when my cell phone rang. Hey, power's back on. Fucking flipped the bitch, turned back around. But yeah. But what I was getting at was the crazy thing. Hurricane fatigue. Now, for those of you not living in Hurricane Alley, not dealing with hurricanes, even if nothing happens, like this is the first storm out of the six I've never lost power. And reason being is because Hurricane Ian fucked our neighborhood up so much. And actually Hurricane, what was the one before Ian? Irma. Irma was real bad. That's when I worked at the radio station. Our power was out for 16 days. Now, the way the power comes into my neighborhood, it comes in the back. It goes down the street, dog legs back, and then comes up behind my house, comes up behind my, in between the people behind me and my house up the street. And what happened was the house to the left of me, they had a tree that fell over and broke the pole and the junction box blew up, the transformer blew up. And we kept calling the city and we kept calling the city. And luckily for me, after day eight, one of the Stan and Haney listeners got his power back. He offered up the generator. He brought it over, hooked it up. We didn't power our AC. We had enough power to run TVs. Basically, we just plugged it into a power strip or whatever. No, we backfed my house, but no AC. Still wasn't strong enough to run my well, so we had no water. But we had we had lights, my refrigerator, TV, and from when we used to run at computers out of my dad's garage that we finished, we had a freestanding Samsung air conditioner, which I just threw away. And it brought our house down to a cool 83 degrees. 16 days, no power. It was so humid in here that even though it's stainless steel will get little rust specks on them. So my refrigerator, my dishwasher and all that starts showing rust. But and then Ian, we were out of power for 10 days. So with the damage caused during those, they had rebuilt their infrastructure. And all the main power poles down Del Prado are now made out of concrete. They're no longer wood. So this was the first time, first hurricane. Our lights literally went real low brown, like our AA batteries on our flashlight was getting low. And then it came back on, and it did that 4 or 5 times, and it went out like twice, and then it came on. We didn't lose power, which means we didn't lose water. And the crazy fucking thing is I'm standing out in my front yard at 9 o'clock, and I'm watching Transformers blow up out in the distance. And it looks like a magnesium fire. As I've explained before, I was at a Volkswagen farm one time. They threw an old Beetle block in the bonfire, which is all magnesium. It just lights up bright fucking white like somebody's welding. So I'm watching these bright light white to like a half second. I'm standing out there and the whole sky lights up. And I think I put this on TikTok too. And it lasted like 5 long. It was like light, almost 8 long seconds. And I could hear the shockwave. And I said on the video, that wasn't a transformer. That was a substation. Still, my power stayed on. Woke up next morning flying Brian, who I think used to work at 105.5 The Beat on the morning show. He posted a story that the Kismet substation blew up. So I actually watched that fucker blow up, but I still, God willing, I didn't lose power.
I think he's on 95.3.
Yeah, whatever it was. Flying Brian?
Yeah.
He's a good cat. He does comedy shows at the Laughing Comedy Club with Larry Venturino. So I talked to him when I'm over there.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, so that was and I know Mike fared well. He was nice enough to loan me his generator for Helene because he inherited one but lives in an apartment. And so I had it from Helene to Milton and then I didn't need it. And so he came and picked it up for his mom. And I felt bad because I was in Kentucky. And so when I got back, Carrie had filled up her car, but she's afraid to drive my truck. So I had 30 miles worth of gas in my Tundra, which I can sit at a stoplight and watch that 2 miles get burnt away at a stoplight. And I said, man, because I picked it up from his house for Helene. I said, I'd bring it back to you, but I have no gas in my truck. And so he came and picked it up, took it over to his mom's. But yeah, other than my dad, we fared well. Now, back to scatterbrain, hurricane fatigue. So what I was getting at is, even if nothing happens, you don't have to have a generator, a hurricane is going to cost you easily $2,000 in prep, water, food, gas for your generators. Yeah. If the power does go out for a few days, you know, eating Pop-Tarts in that ship. And that's if you're lucky. I mean, you're spending $1,000, $1,200 on food and supplies. And then for the storm that I hit you, good, cool, I don't have to file a claim. But even if you don't file a claim, all the houses that got fucked up, our insurance is still going to go up. And so it's just, it gets to be unaffordable where not only are you getting fatigued from the stress, but everybody in the world's dealing with this fucking inflation. And then when you add hurricane inflation on top of it, even though you didn't file a claim, it's like, I get it. You pay for insurance, you file a claim, even though you've been paying for fucking years, now you get your rates go up because you got to pay for the shit you filed a claim on. But now we're essentially paying for the shit somebody else filed a claim on. It's like, how the fuck? It's like, it's so frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. I don't even remember what my insurance rates went up to, but it was a significant increase. And
at least $100 a month. At least a minimum.
Oh yeah.
$150 bucks a month.
And I had to file a claim for Irma and Ian. I got damage from both of them. And you know, now you look at like Steen Hatchie and, you know, Tampa area and, you know, all through the Big Bend. And, you know, that got destroyed. And, you know, the rebuilding from that is going to be so, you know, so monumental that I can only imagine how many insurance companies are going to try to bail out of Florida this time.
Well, my dad and I were talking, if things continue to hit Fort Myers Beach like they have been, the entire island of Fort Myers Beach, if that happens two or three more times, there's not going to be any residents living there. It's going to be fucking nothing but hotels and multi-million dollar skyscrapers, because the residents who have to file a hurricane claim every goddamn year because their house gets flooded, even though they're up on stilts, cars get washed away, it's going to be unaffordable for a regular person to live there. You know, obviously multi-millionaires and billionaires can come down and build their mansions up on sticks and have... But regular folk, the people who live there now, I mean, because up until recently, yeah, we got the new Jimmy Buffett place there. But up until recently, Fort Myers Beach is a really, if you're looking for a tourist attraction, it kind of sucks. It has beaches, then it has a bunch of Florida-style tchotchke shops. There's 80 of them, and they all sell the same airbrush t-shirts. They all sell the same fucking alligator heads. Coming from Huntington Beach, California... Yeah. I moved down here from Huntington Beach.
Oh, yeah.
You had surf shops there. They have a surf shop here, but we don't have no surfing. But you could go to real restaurants on Huntington Beach. You want a fucking steak, there's a steakhouse. You want a sports bar, you go to Fort Myers Beach. You have the Cottage, which served decent food. The top of the Lonnie Kai. But other than that, what, Hooters? And it's just all it's just all dive bars and fucking tchotchke shops.
Yeah. Well, it was... like quaint old school, you know, beach town.
Yeah, but all these people and, who the houses and the people, how many insurance claims can you file in your Chotsky shop before you go out of business? How many alligator heads can you lose in your inventory and fucking airbrush t-shirts and t-shirt presses and shit?
Well, the thing is now the buildings are gone. So, you know, how do you rebuild something that probably wasn't a huge, you know, a huge profit margin to begin with when you've lost everything and you're starting from scratch?
You know, I record everything. Everything's content for me, and I didn't do it. I wish I would have, but it didn't seem relevant. My daughter and I were at Dairy Queen on Fort Myers Beach the Sunday before Irma came. And it was so funny because we were standing on the beach and my daughter freaks out. She started running, what the fuck? Ah! A manatee swam next to her, scared the living shit out of her. And then she refused. I'm like, and I saw it. I was staring out. I said, you realize, A, it's illegal to touch them. They can touch you. But B, if people could, they would pay to swim with fucking manatees. You just had one swim by you, and now you're acting like it was a fucking great white. She would not get back in the water. And so we end up sitting in the Dairy Queen right next to the pier. Had lunch there. Miss Bird was flying in, eating French fries. We sat there for an hour and a half. Got up, went home. 2 days later, fucking gone. No longer exist. Wiped off the fucking map from the storm surge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know. I mean, it's at what point does paradise quit being paradise?
And that's the question. Carrie's looking at houses in Texas. She's like, you know, for what our house is worth, I think obviously the shit on the internet versus what you get after inspections are two different things. But hypothetically, I could sell my house for about $380 because of the $400,000 house I built across the street. She's like, looking outside of fucking Houston, Texas. $380,000, you can get like a 5-bedroom fucking house. And these are huge fucking houses. And I told her, so what do we need that big of a house for? We only use two of our rooms here. I mean, if I'm not in a podcast studio, we're in our bedroom 24 hours a day. But I told her, I said, look, I could hypothetically move. I can work remotely. I don't like the idea of leaving my dad down here, but now with his trailer situation, he's been talking about just fucking hitting the road and being going out to Vegas to visit my brother for a few months out of the year and then just traveling around with his camper, going to Ohio and then coming back down here in the wintertime and just doing that route. And so, he's my only direct family lives down here, but Carrie's got nieces, nephews, sisters. I'm like, I said, before you go getting your hopes up looking at properties in other states, you need to sit down and have an honest conversation with you about, can you leave your family? Because that's what you're doing. You know, there's no reason to play Fantasy Island and let's look at houses and talk about how cool it is if at the end of the day you can't move, which I can't blame her. You know, if my dad doesn't
move. That's what we've got. You know, my mother-in-law's here and, you know, she's alone now.
Yeah.
Since, you know, April when my father-in-law passed away. So, you know, my sister-in-law and her husband live up in Northport, but it's, you know, do we want to leave her here? I mean, it would be very easy for us to pick up and go to North Alabama where both of our sons moved to. And, you know, same thing for, you know, you sell your house for here, you can buy a big chunk of property and, you know, a decent sized house in the Huntsville area.
I could easily tell my dad, hey, collect your insurance money. Let's move to fucking Texas. Let's go in on a house and build you a fucking father-in-law suite on the other side. The fucking, you know, you've seen this house where you have the main house, the garage, and a whole other house on the other side of the garage so that the elderly person can feel like they're living on their own. When I was in Kentucky visiting my mom, her boyfriend from 1985 showed up. He moved to Iowa with his son. He was a long-haul trucker's entire life. They bought 35 fucking acres out in Iowa, live out in the middle of nowhere in a big old house. And I'm sure his mortgage is probably what we pay down here, just had the luxury of getting our dicks kicked in every time a hurricane rolls through town. But then you start looking politically. Yeah, what state could I move to that is open as Florida? Texas is open, but let's be honest, a lot of Californians are moving there. We know fucking Austin's gonna flip, which is scary.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the problem. I mean, that's the whole issue. I mean, you've lived in California. I grew up, you know, born and raised in Oregon, and there's a lot of real estate in Oregon, Washington, and California that is not what you would picture. And the population centers are in the valley. So you've got, you know, San Diego, LA,
Santa Monica.
What's the capital? San Jose.
You asked me too quick.
Anyway, you know,
Sacramento.
Sacramento. Hang on. I don't know why my battery's dying. I'm plugged in, so.
But, yeah, so it's like the hurricane fatigue is, I think, did I lose you completely? Welcome back. You there? Oh, he's froze up. Oh, there he is. Your mic's you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
A little residual hurricane issue, but yeah, so we're going to move on past the hurricane talk, but yeah, it's, I'll be honest, I've lived down here for fucking 24 years. I'm a proud immigrant to Florida, as you can see from my Florida-raised or Florida-grown hat, even though I'm not grown, but I've lived here longer than anywhere else, so it's definitely had a bigger impact on me than any other state, but I'd be lying if I wouldn't say, you know, if Kerry came to me and said, hey, let's move to Texas, and be honest with you, it doesn't affect this podcast that much, but what's the scuttlebutt? Both my co-hosts live in Texas, and those fuckers are constantly getting invited to all kind of World War II shit. They're doing fucking ceremonies and fucking tours, and which is great for our show, but I'm here in fucking Florida, which I get invited to, but then it's attached to a $400 airplane ticket, which isn't doable. But yeah, yeah, so
exactly.
I could be doing a lot. Dale Dye invited us to stay at his fucking compound in Texas. Dale Dye invited to stay on his property. I'm going to try to make it happen, even if it does include a plane ticket. The guy's 80. And if I need to go see him before. So, yeah, Texas would definitely be. And it's big fucking fish in Texas, too. But anyhow, speaking of fishing, we're going fishing in the morning early. So I'm looking forward to that. You had a few things on your list you want to get to, even though we're 100 minutes into this, but that's okay. What do you have on your list you want to grab onto?
Hang on. Let me pull it up real quick.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see my drone video I put up?
I have not yet.
Thanks for the support. Anyhow, when you watch it, it's called Small Towns from Above.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one.
The whole thing?
Yeah, that was super cool.
That was basically... Look, I'm not ragging on her. She had a life-impacting surgery. Her boyfriend from 1985 came to town to see her, which was great. It did affect my plan of hanging out with my mom for a few days before her surgery. So while her and Charlie were hanging out, I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to go fly my drone and record some footage. But that racetrack is 2 miles from her house, which is very sad because it's the old, you know, you Simpsons would do episodes on, you know, all the big developments come to town. It's going to have a great impact on your economy. It fucking did not help Sparta's economy at all. But yeah, all Rabbit Hash, that place has been around since the 1800s. The general store burnt down 6 years ago. They rebuilt it. They had to get permission from Coca-Cola to reuse that logo because they don't use that mascot anymore. But that town is so small.
Oh, wow.
And here's the crazy thing. That paddle boat in that video, that's on the other side of the Ohio River from Rabbit Hash. It's about a mile. Who knew you got fucking great drone signal in the boonies? Because you're not competing with cell phones. You're not competing with all.
Okay.
Here in Cape Coral, I can fly my drone about a mile away, and I get down to like 2 bars on my cell phone because, you know, you're using your cell phone attached to your remote control. I flew that thing all the way across the Ohio River, had full fucking bars, and only used 10% of my battery before I even turned it around. I could fly down there for fucking miles because there's very little interference.
And that's super cool.
Yeah, and so, remember Kat Von D, the tattoo artist?
Yeah.
I knew that she had moved to a small town, and I heard the name before, but it didn't register to me at all. My mom lives in Warsaw. You drive 10 minutes down the street, cross the bridge into Indiana, and then you saw that farm in Switzerland, Indiana. You drive past Switzerland, you drive through this little town called Vivi, and then you go to Madison. I love Madison. When Carrie and I would go there a few years ago, we'd go to the antique stores. I had to go to Madison to get to the Lowe's to get a plumber's putty ring because you go visit your mom, you got shit to do. I'm at my mom's house. There's a brand new garbage disposal sitting in a box. And she's 45 minutes from, or an hour really, from any civilization. That Warsaw video is literally where she lives. There's one stoplight, no fast food. The only fast food restaurants they have is a Dairy Queen and a Subway. And the closest closest main cities are an hour away. And I'm like, what's with the disposal? She's like, well, I scheduled Home Depot, but they keep pushing it off. I was like, do you have a disposal in there now? She's like, yeah, it's bad. I said, well, no worries. I can swap it out. You know, if you already have an existing disposal, it's easy because the plumbing's already there. And so I went and opened up her kit, and it had everything but the gasket that you got to put in the sink. And so I had to drive and got one. But I was driving back, and then I was on TikTok, and Kat Von D came up. She moved to Vivi. She, like, literally lives, like, 20 minutes, like, from my mom's house. I had to drive through Vivi to get to Madison. She bought an old mansion in Vivi, turned it into an Airbnb. She found God, was born again. Mm-hmm. She has blacked out all her tattoos, and she runs an Airbnb in a mansion in Vivi, Indiana, which is about 15 minutes from Warsaw. And so that video where I'm flying over that little homestead from the 1800s, that barn, that is right before you get to Vivi in Switzerland. So you got to drive through Switzerland to get to Vivi. So it was like, it didn't occur to me. It was like, oh, shit. I was like right there. If I would have thought about it, because I had to drive to Madison, I would have went to Kat Von D's place and checked it out. But maybe next time. So it's just kind of weird to think that she moved to a small town right across the river from where my mom lives.
That's awesome. Yeah. I can't get my list to come up, so.
That's all right. We've done a whole.
We might have to.
We still got a show to do on Wednesday, so this is a makeup show anyhow. So we'll save it for Wednesday, which is only 3 days away. Just want to thank everybody for your continued support. Like I said before, just share us with a friend. You know, you have a like-minded friend. Just say, hey, check out this podcast. You can download it on Spotify, Apple. And by the way, if you do follow us on Spotify, Spotify don't really have a ranking system, but Apple does. If you download us on iTunes, please go give us a 5-star review and a nice review, because the more rankings you have, the more likely they will suggest our podcast to other people. And as always, thank you guys so much, and we will talk to you all next week.